appreciate that. She's taking notes of the meeting. I'd like to recognize the Councilmember Kilpatrick's table, Councilman Street, Councilman Hollins, Councilman Smiley, Councilmember Diller, Councilman Retta. And we have enough for quorum, I believe.
Yeah, just enough.
Okay, and do I have a motion on the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All minutes have been motioned and second. All those approved, say aye.
Aye.
All those against, say no. Okay, the minutes have been approved. All right, moving on to resolutions. Very important resolution today. Resolution 14-215. Councilman Street, would you like to introduce that and go to your lifelines?
No. The resolution provides the funding for the acquisition of land for the Route 9 Library. And quite frankly, I don't want to spend a lot of time, my time, talking about this because, in my view, and we're all going to have a presentation, 14215 and 14217 comport with each other. And I'll have a lot to say with 217, which in my view comports with 214.
Okay, very good. Do we have someone from the Department of Community Services who would like to make a presentation on 14-215?
This is Carrie Casey with the Department of Community Services. Diana Brown is not here today. She's actually at the Wilmington Library regarding a technology announcement they're doing there. And I think Special Services, because it's the land acquisition, they handled the acquisition.
All right. Before you go on to just a couple items of business, Councilman Sheldon has joined us at the table, Councilman Weiner, and I've been informed that Councilman Bell will not be here, and I will floor manage his two ordinances that are on for light tax tonight and for this meeting. Yes, ma'am. Identify yourself for the record.
Mary Ann Doherty, Special Services. So the resolution before you authorizes the county to enter into the purchase of three properties located at 3028 Newcastle Avenue, 3022 Newcastle Avenue, and 230 Hillview Avenue. They total almost 13 acres, and it's for the proposed library that the county would like to build. Before we, entered into any kind of sales agreements, we wanted to do our due diligence environmentally and make sure that the site was appropriate for a library. So we entered into a brownfields agreement with DENREC. So a brownfields agreement under Title VII, Delaware Code Chapter, I think it's 95 or 91 rather, provides the county with liability protection in the event that there are any environmental conditions existing out there. Because once you purchase a property under the Hazardous Substance Cleanup Act under Title VII, when you become the owner, it doesn't matter if you contributed anything to contaminate the property. You buy it and you're strictly liable for cleaning it up. So we wanted to make sure that we would protect ourselves. So that's why we entered into a brownfields agreement with the state, with DEMREC. So that gives us liability protection for anything that might be out there. And it also allows us to receive up to $625,000 from the state for the brownfields cleanup, like remediation or oversight costs or anything like that. So as you may remember, we hired 10 Bears Consulting. They're an environmental firm. They've done a lot of work with DEMREC in the past, and they've done work for the county. So Clay Greer from 10 Bears is here. He did the testing, and he can answer any questions you might have regarding the findings. But my understanding, everything is appropriate for a library. But if you have anything specific you want to ask him.
Councilman Weiner, Councilman Smiley.
Thank you. Just for the record, if you could state for the record what your findings are and conclusions.
Sure. My name is Clay Greer. I'm with 10 Bears Environmental, and we did the brownfields investigation through the state for the county. We did a subsurface investigation based on our historical review of the property, finding that historical use included some land cover, some soil fill that was placed on part of the property, and some prior use as a automobile repair shop. And we found very limited conditions on the property in our soil investigation, groundwater testing, such that our assessment indicates that it's suitable for commercial use. We have a report prepared and sent in to the state, and we believe that they'll support our findings that, that the site is appropriate for commercial use. There are some limited environmental concerns with the site. For example, some asphalt millings covering a part of the property that will require management during construction. But other than that, there's a requirement to do an environmental covenant, which is just an agreement to limit the use of the property to a commercial use, non-residential use, and not pull groundwater for drinking water purposes. This is very typical of the area and really any urban area, especially the area around Wilmington and Newcastle. And that's the extent of the requirements.
And what sort of remediation is needed? And secondly, if we were to have a playground or walking paths outside, would additional remediation be needed?
As far as the remediation, that environmental covenant is the remediation, and it's legal agreement or reported on the deed that says we're going to do a commercial development here.
But is that a hold harmless clause, or does that, I mean, we can't waive away our liability. It's strict liability and tort.
No, absolutely. You're given, and I'm not the lawyer here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that you're given an upfront liability release as a brownfield developer coming into the brownfields program. So you're not responsible for the environmental contamination that is there, provided that you follow all the requirements of the brownfield program and any remedial requirements. And this environmental covenant is just a restriction on future use. As long as those requirements are met, you're not strictly liable for contamination.
Okay, well, we can waive liability, but if we were to use it for walking paths or playgrounds, does the use extend to that?
I believe that it does.
Are you certain?
Denrec, I'm not certain of that. I'm not absolutely certain of that. So that may require some additional remedy, but it would certainly be managed in the program in the same way. That additional remedy would just be clean soil cover brought in for those specific areas.
In other words, a cap?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, can I get back to the attorney? Could you answer the same questions that I posed?
No, you were asking if we have our liability protection by entering into the brownfields agreement.
Yes.
So, you know, he, in his report, he suggested that there be an environmental covenant that goes on the deed that says it's restricted, that you can't, you know, use it in the future for residential use. So what's your question?
Well, a residential use is a term of art, but a walking path or a playground is residential in its nature. So I'm asking you, because it's not unusual to have walking paths or a playground around a library.
Right. Anything that we do would be approved through DenRec through their work plan, through a work plan and a final plan with them. So as long as it's approved through them, then that's fine, where our liability protection is intact. If we went and violated environmental covenant, then that may, you know, cause a problem. But
would any remediation be needed to use it for a playground or walking paths?
I think that, like he said, I believe you just put some soil, certain soil down, and
a cap.
Appropriate.
I'm not sure that that's absolutely necessary, and that's one of the nitty gritty details.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Clay Greer again. I'm not sure that that is absolutely a requirement, because there would be certain exposure assumptions under a playground use that aren't necessarily equivalent to a residential use. It might be assumed that those children aren't there every day, that they aren't necessarily digging into the ground like they would do at home.
Okay, I'm just familiar with this. Since Councilman Carney and I had this issue on Fox Point Park, was my district and now his. Mm-hmm. So it's not residential, but we capped it anyway. Is there going
yes.
to be a cap?
On the use.
Well, suppose you had kids playing there or walking on a walking path. That was the concern which Denrick enunciated for Fox Point Park.
Yeah. And I think it depends on, for that situation, most likely you had more severe contamination than we have here. We have some pretty mild, low-level contamination, so the numbers are marginal, even for a residential scenario.
Okay, could we just get some clarification in writing, because his answer was uncertain, and I think yours is as well, as to whether or not the capping that would be needed for walking paths or playground would be sufficient. I know you said that Denrick would have to issue sufficient approvals, but that doesn't give the answer. I'm supportive of this. I just think we have an obligation as council to make sure that this is clear.
We have our liability protection as long as we go through the work plan and the final plan. So everything is a step with Demrec. So they're going to approve everything we do out there. So there's no proposed cap, and Demrec hasn't said that we need one right now.
Well, what is our option if a cap is determined to be needed for a playground or walking pass? At whose expense would that cap be paid for?
Well, sorry.
That I can definitely speak to. Again, this is Clay Greer. It would definitely qualify as an eligible expense under the Brownfields grant if it is a requirement of Denrec to place the cap there for that specific purpose, and it would be limited to that area. And I am confident that we wouldn't have any more of a remedial requirement.
Okay, and who would pay for this brownfield expense? I know it would qualify as a brownfield expense, but who would be paying for it?
It comes out of our brownfields grant money.
So we already have money allocated aside for it?
Well, once we applied for the brownfields agreement and we signed it, they gave us grant money. We have money towards that. We have up to $625,000. The first $500,000 is dollar to dollar, and the second $125,000 is 50 cents on the dollar, I think.
Yep.
There's money allocated for anything we would need out there. It would come right out of that pot if it's determined that they would want us to do that.
When would we know? I mean,
if it's required. The question hasn't been asked. At this point...
I'm just asking the question now because libraries and parks all the time have playgrounds and walking paths. Mm-hmm.
Right. We don't, I guess at this point, we don't anticipate that we'll be having to use much of that money. The $625,000. So I guess as we work with Denrec, if they decided that they wanted a cap, they haven't told us that we would need a cap or anything out there, but if they determine that, then we would use it out of that money.
All right. Thanks. I monopolize a lot of time. My apologies to Councilman.
I'd like to move along. Councilman Smiley, Retta, then Kilpatrick.
And Councilman Weiner is in the same area I was. First, let me clarify. Because I have questions, doesn't mean I don't support the library for the purchases of the property. But I just got this in my hands about an hour ago, and reading through, I noticed the first parcel goes to settlement in 60 days, and the other two go to settlement in 75.
And that was Mary Ann Dougherty, Special Services. That was only at the request of the property owner.
And I'm just saying, and that leads to the 60-day window to evaluate if there are any environmental conditions. I understand what we just heard. You're saying we already have that grant money allocated.
Yes, we've already done our environmental recovery.
So this is done.
We've done our environmental testing. Yeah, that's done. There's not going to be any more after we sign this agreement.
Okay,
there's nothing else. That's in there, but we did it up front, our due diligence.
Okay, well, that's what I wanted to know. I know we'd asked for a brownfield study, but did that include borings?
Yes.
Subsurface borings? Okay, so... this is in here, but that has already been accomplished. We're satisfied with the results. We've got $600,000+ in grant money. The first $500,000 is dollar for dollar. So if it was $1 million, if something came that was $1 million cleanup, we would be on the hook for 50%.
Well, if we thought it was $1 million cleanup, then we might have reevaluated whether we would, want to enter into a purchase agreement of that nature. So it's not that. So
I'm talking about unforeseen.
Well, we know what's out there, so there shouldn't be.
I mean, personally, I'm familiar with one of the buyers because it took me a year to get him from polluting my neighborhood with his business. So now we're buying his property, he's making more money, and that's fine. But that I just wanted to clarify all three of the contracts with the due diligence have that. And you had 60 days in which to exercise it, which really didn't seem like a lot of time.
Yeah, after, right. Yeah.
For to have that. And if we had not done it, quite honestly, I was going to ask that the results come back to us before a decision was made as to what to do as far as future negotiation on that property.
Right, right.
But if that's been done, that's the issue I have with all three.
Yeah,
all three contracts.
That's been done. They're all the environmental testing has been done through the brownfields program.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Okay, thank you. And my questioning would have been the same, pretty much the same as Councilman Weiner's. And I guess just to go one step beyond that, what if we would, we talked about our liability protection, but to go beyond liability protection, if we are looking at safety of the pedestrians or the children playing in that area, do we have the ability to just say that we would like the cap put on there? Or and if we did that, would that be at our expense, or would then we be under the Brownfields agreement if there's anything iffy at all?
Well, you can certainly...
Please identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Mary Ann Doctor, Special Services. You can certainly, you know, if you feel that's something that you want, you can certainly ask for that. I think based on Clay's findings, he didn't feel that it rose to the level where you would need a cap. He could certainly ask DENREC, you know, say we would like to have a cap. Could we please get that, you know, reimbursed? It's like an extra protection over, you know, and above. Could we have that reimbursed through our Brownfields agreement grant money? Now, whether, I guess it depends on their interpretation, whether they think it would rise to that level that they would, you know, they might say that's an overkill, or they might say, okay, we'll take it out of it. They probably would say, okay, maybe take it out of it if you want. I don't know. But we can certainly ask.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to recognize it.
Can
yes,
I add
sir.
One more thing to that?
Yes.
This is Clay Greer. I just wanted to add that most of the development, in my understanding, would consist of a building and a parking lot that would serve as the cap. So there would be very limited space outside of that, landscaping islands in the parking lot, little lawn strips between the parking lot and the building that would be uncovered. That would be potential locations to apply a cap.
Thank you.
I'd like to recognize that Councilman Tackett's joined us, and Councilman Redd had a question.
Yeah, thank you. Well, with that, if they don't cap, would they remove any of the dirt and then just fill it up again? Because I know a lot of times they do that. They might not cap it, but they'll remove, they'll dig down so far and then.
This is Clay Greer again. We did extensive testing of the soil at the site. We also followed that up with a risk assessment where we took the numbers that we got back and we ran it through some standard calculations to determine the risk level for both the residential and the commercial scenario. The risk associated with the soil at the site that we tested based on our results, pretty extensive testing, indicated that it was perfectly acceptable for commercial use. So DENREC would not require a cap on this site. The only reason to go digging would be if we were, at least in terms of DENREC's requirements, would be if we wanted to put residential housing on the property. In my understanding of the exposure scenario that you would use, even in a pathway or playground scenario, it would be consistent with a typical commercial use or something like a recreational use, which EPA has a separate risk assessment procedure for that. And it's my understanding that the residential scenario is the only one that has failed this risk assessment process. So in other words, I don't think excavation would be necessary. It would also be difficult to find the locations to dig if that's what you wanted to do.
Well, with that, the area that you're talking about that might be the worst part, is that where the buildings want to sit?
There is no worst part. There's a little minor kind of scattered random hits of low-level contamination.
Okay, but with that, you did say that if it was a housing area, okay, with the way they build houses today, they put a 4-inch concrete floor in, and either concrete walls or block walls. normally the way they do it today is concrete walls. So when they do that, the difference between that and a building, tell me the difference, because they put a 4-inch or 6-inch concrete floor.
There's no difference. Demrick is assuming
there's people. What I'm saying is there's people in it.
Right. Demrick is assuming that your children are out in your yard digging in the ground with shovels and getting it on them and playing with their toys, sticking them in their mouths, and physically eating some of the dirt that way. And that is not really envisioned so much on a commercial property with library patrons. So there's no real difference in the construction techniques. It's what Demrick is assuming you're doing when you're there.
Okay.
Any other questions? Yes, Councilman Weiner.
Yeah, just a comment. And what I learned was a collective experience with Fox Point Park was that it was anticipated that kids would play in the dirt in the playground, and some of the dirt through tools or whatever would get in their mouths. So, I wanted to put this on the record. Mm-hmm. It was put on the record, and we can now go forward. I'm prepared to vote.
Councilman Street.
Yes, I appreciate everybody's questions and concerns, which obviously that they're legitimate. But just so everybody sees it clearly, in terms of that much space on Route 9 altogether, we're kind of limited in terms of other options if we're not able to purchase these parcels. So if it's really going to be on the Route 9 corridor in basically that vicinity, our options are limited, and the administration, the law department, and others have spent a lot of time researching where we could find the appropriate space to accommodate the proposed library.
Councilman Street, if you could you just give us a cross street idea where these parcels are located on Route 9, and just for the benefit of the record and for those present and members of the council here?
Quite frankly, they're directly across the street, catty-corner from Bowler Rental.
Okay.
And if anybody not familiar with Bowler Rental, so if everybody's familiar, that's the area.
Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Just one question. I noticed, because I looked them up on Parcel View, so you've got two large parcels, and then the one entering, the one on Hillview, is like a quarter of an acre. Is that necessary for what, a second ingress egress, or when you, because it's, two big rectangles, and then in the back of it looks like there's this one little quarter acre parcel.
Go right here. Steve Rubel, Special Services. That smaller parcel is necessary. I had some initial discussions with DelDOT, and although we don't have a final decision, what they're saying is that we would not be able to turn left into the library off of Newcastle Avenue traveling south. So essentially you would only be able to access the library on Newcastle Avenue traveling north. And so that secondary access would be important because it's off of the main intersection there, and you'd be able to turn left or right depending on what direction you're traveling and access the library. So it's really critical to have that parcel.
Okay, so it is an ingress egress.
Absolutely.
And it looks to me that it does not go through the neighborhood, so we should not hear anything. I mean, it's like the second lot off of Newcastle Avenue, right? So you're not driving through the neighborhood to get to.
So correct.
Okay.
The residences are
beyond that.
Correct.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct.
Okay.
We were out there walking that area just the other day together. So your view from what you saw is absolutely correct.
Okay.
I'd like to recognize that Council President Bullock has joined us at the table. Are there any other questions? Comments from members of council on resolution 14-1215. Yes.
Yeah. I lost about 10 minutes. I just had one question. Can council and myself get a copy of the 10 bidders report?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, comments from members of council? Speaking, is it chair of this finance meeting. I'm extremely pleased to see this come forward and to lay the groundwork for what will be the construction of a great new library facility in the very much underserved Route 9 corridor. I would like, if that would be allowed, to be added as co-sponsor of this, Mr. Street, Councilman Street.
Mr. Chairman, that would be welcome and greatly appreciated.
Thank you. And any other comments, questions? It's a great beginning to what's going to be, I think, a very great project to benefit Route 9. So looking forward to that. Any other questions, comments? Moving along. Resolution 14-216, authorizing execution of one purchase order contract to document technology systems for the renewal of annual software maintenance for DTS track record software for the Office of Technology, amount of $53,000. Okay, anybody want to talk a little bit about the contents of this resolution?
Okay. I guess I can see this. This is Tony Grund, yes. Chief Administrative Services and Office of Procurement. This is actually software for maintenance for a recorder of deeds, actually. So it's an annual maintenance software for DTS track.
Okay, and it's very common that we get these software maintenance contracts come through, and maintaining all the software that services the functioning of this government. So this will go to the DTS track record software for the Office of Technology. Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments from members of council? Moving along, Resolution 14-217, Councilman Street.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have prepared an executive summary in the form of a PowerPoint, and the first portion of it will be presented by Ms. Casey. I will present a portion of it regarding the some of the historical significance of the area, as well as some school information, and then she will complete it in terms of some of the options for the downtown development district itself.
Thank you. Okay. We're waiting for the PowerPoint to be booted up and put on the screen.
I work for Department of Community Services, and I'm really pleased to be here today to talk, give an executive summary on a really exciting new opportunity that the state has offered to jurisdictions. And we've been working on it, and I just want to say before I begin, this is an exciting opportunity. It's a very brand new opportunity. It was just created by the state, and you know, I apologize in advance for any confusion, because we're working it as we're doing it, and we have a very short timeline to apply, and I think even the state, we're all sort of getting our feet, you know, situated with this new opportunity, this new application process. So I just wanted to say that from the beginning. So I'm going to give you, along with Councilman Street, who's been my partner in this application, and a lot of our community members, which few are here today, which I'll introduce in a minute, just an executive summary of what this exciting opportunity is for Newcastle County. So that saying that, I'm going to begin right now. Okay. So I'm going to be as quick as I can. It looks like a lot. I have a lot to cover. If you have any questions, maybe we just save them to the end. But I'm going to give you some information on this opportunity that the state is offering, and I'm going to talk to you about some boundaries that we've established, and then Councilman Street is going to talk about the history of the area, and then I'm going to go into a very high global description of the draft downtown development district plan that we are working on, Newcastle County is working on, and then just to kind of think out of the box, a vision of what this might be, okay, and then sort of the timeline. Okay. The Downtown Development District, Act of 2014, the start of this year, was enacted by General Assembly in order to help build a stable community of long-term residents by improving housing opportunities, increasing homeownership rates, and reducing the number of vacant homes. And what's different for me as a housing person, there's a big piece of this which involves spurring private capital investment in commercial business districts. So it's a really interesting balance between helping stabilize neighborhoods and also help with commercial business districts. And it also, with the overall goal of helping to strengthen communities. For the application itself, some of the particulars of the application. The maximum size is 225 acres for local governments. Only local jurisdictions are eligible to apply for this designation. So we as Newcastle County, we have, you know, population size on our hand, on our side. So we can apply for a designation for an area of 225 acres. The districts must be connected. You can't say, I want to do, you know, something here and something there. It all has to relate to one another. And the applicant must describe the need for the incentives. Looking at distressed communities and looking at poverty rates, homeownership rates, vacancy rates, and saying, you know, this is a community, this is an area that really needs this designation to begin to plan, to really develop an innovative plan for their community. The district plan is actually the guide for the development activities. And one thing that's kind of interesting about that is that, you know, the Division of Community Development and Housing, and I know I always come in and talk about this stuff, is we already are doing a lot of work in this neighborhoods that we're going to talk about, as is land use, as is economic development. So a big piece of this is for interdepartmentally to connect with each other and to work together to create a plan that, and working with the community is a huge part of it. It helps get us to the next level of real innovative, you know, stabilization, and it's just super exciting for us to be involved in it. You have to have a group, you have to put local incentives, things that you already have in place, which everything that's going to be in our plan when we apply is already things that are here at Newcastle County. We already offer it, but it's working together to include those incentives. And then what we're going to talk about a little bit at the end is the governing body resolution. We need a resolution supporting the plan. So the designation itself does not bring millions of dollars into the area. We wish it did, but it does not. But what we know that it does is for new construction or renovation in this designated area, you would be eligible, and they have a very streamlined process. It's not like you're going through a bunch of bells and whistles. If you are doing a housing, let's say you're buying 10 vacant houses in a designation area, your hard costs can be offset by a 20% grant through the Delaware State Housing Authority. So if you put $100,000 into a house, you have to take off $25,000 because that's what they call kind of a deductible. And that $75,000, you could apply to Delaware State Housing Authority and get a 20% grant on that work. So for our interfaith community housings, our habitats, the county itself, we do some development. It gives us the opportunity to get an additional funding to help us move a project forward and also do more work because we'll have a little bit of extra money to do it. It's focused on residential, mixed use, and commercial development. And the state has promised other incentives. They're being developed as we speak. We've heard DENRAC with brownfields, like we were just talking about. DelDOT with some transportation enhancements, because when we met with the communities, they were really interested in transportation enhancements, but those things haven't been determined. All we know a downtown development designation will give us is this opportunity to apply for additional funding. So this is the proposed downtown development district boundaries that we've been working with. And the areas include, the shaded areas, it's a 223-acre parcel, okay? And I don't know if we have a we see here is the here's the Bullerama, which we just talked about. This is the library site. And one of the things when we were working together on this plan is to look at including whole neighborhoods, not to say, well, we can do 2 acres of, you know, or 2 streets of this neighborhood or 2 streets. So we included Dunleaf, Rosegate, Simon's Gardens. Thank you. Okay. So that's and It's centered around the library and the library itself to spur stabilization and other types of things around that library site. As a county government, we're not eligible to. Do you know how to do that? Sorry. Thank you. Gosh, technology to me. We're not eligible to apply for funding for the library, obviously. But around those areas, we looked at places you could have 10 to 15 minute walk to the library site. So those were the neighborhoods. And you know, in my head, when we first thought about this, I thought it would be from Hamilton Park all the way through to the border of Old Newcastle, but I have my acreage is way off. So that is 223 acres. Just in terms of size, the green is the proposed DDD area, the Downtown Development District area, and then the whole entire area is the focus of where the library service area is going to address. So we are talking about a pretty small area, but that's where we think we can do the most good because we're going to be building from the strength of the anchor library. Okay, so now I'm going to turn it over to Councilman Street. He's going to give some history of the area.
Yes, thank you very much. From the slide, you'll see that Dunleaf was built in the early 1950s, and if you Google or you Yahoo Dunleaf, it will tell you that Dunleaf was the first housing development marketed for African Americans in Delaware. The community was named after the Rogers and DuPont family's estate, Dunleaf Mansion. The streets are named after prominent African Americans such as Jackie Robinson, Ralph Bunch, George Washington Carver. So that was the beginning of Dunleaf. It was developed by Leon Wiener. And what actually happened is there was excitement in the community about Dunleaf and it's being built. And our school teachers, our administrators, some of the limited federal employees who were postal workers, IRS workers, they moved into Dunleaf when it was built. Next slide.
Yep.
Directly across the street from Dunleaf on Rogers Road is Community Presbyterian Church. And what folks don't realize about this church and Dunleaf is, in my view, based on the foundation, some of the things that I actually witnessed and some of the things that actually transpired. Dunleaf and the city of Wilmington, that church, were a major, major part of the civil rights struggle in the state of Delaware. And what happened was those who were professionally employed and others in the Dunleaf community joined hands with Wilmington. And there were periodic meetings, not just at this church, but a lot of churches, that really, the architects, in my opinion, of the civil rights struggle in Delaware, orchestrated a lot of the civil rights struggle right out of that church. Next slide. And the architects and my heroes, Louis L. Redden, of course, who was the graduate of Harvard Law School, first African-American lawyer admitted to the Delaware Bar, and we've had great discussion, and there's great familiarity. This building's named after him in terms of the role he played in the civil rights struggle. Also, these are the only architects, but they were critical, and they were critical in that area. Lilton Mitchell, who was from Milford, actually lived in Delaware City. He was the president of the NAACP for years and years. And Reverend Moyer, of course, was the pastor of that church, and he was instrumental. And together, working with residents from the city of Wilmington, working with residents in Dunleaf, and folks from throughout the state, in my opinion, very biased opinion, but with foundation, these were the architects of the civil rights struggle in Delaware, and a lot of things happened in and around that community that we have all benefited from in this state. As a result of their work. Integration and desegregation didn't come about easily in the Route 9 corridor. And this is an excerpt that we grabbed from an article written by someone who lived in Collins Park in 1959. But what folks want to forget is that first black family to try to move into Collins Park in 1959, before they moved in, the house was bombed. And they never got to move in. And so if you back to the church, the NAACP and the architects, they're the ones who came together and responded to this. But as sad and as tragic as that incident was, it was actually what, in my opinion, was the beginning of successful integration of housing in the state of Delaware, because folks in high levels of decision-making had to respond to the NAACP, the civil rights leaders, and then as the state came together and said, this is not going to happen anymore. So as sad as it was the beginning of something positive that we're all benefiting from today. As, and I want folks to understand, I'm driven about this. And I don't want y'all to take this burden, because it's my burden. But I came into the arena in 1974, and we went to, and I was hired to do, in 1974, to do what I volunteered to do since 1981. And the school desegregation order that was implemented in January, the 1978 order, prior to it being implemented, and big boys let me at the table, but I couldn't play. But what happened was, before the DSEG order was implemented, they decided that suburban kids would not have to go to two of the former black school districts. They'd only have to go to Wilmington. So they went from Dunleavy to Millside, which is pictured there, and they went all the way down the Route 9 corridor to Memorial Drive, and they closed every school in the former Delaware School District. And they converted the high school that was an outstanding high school, predominantly African American, state basketball championship, they converted that to an elementary school, and that way nobody from the suburbs had to actually go to school in the historical black area, because everything was on the south side of Memorial Drive. Next slide. And this is an end result of what I view as the Neighborhood School Act. And Eisenberg Elementary School is a school that services all the children who are in the proposed service area for the library and the proposed service area. It is the actual feeder pattern for Eisenberg Elementary. Can we go back to the test scores? Now, in the 70s, big boys let me be at the table, but they didn't let me play. 1994, it's my watch. And as far as I'm concerned, it's been haunting me ever since. I knew that when the court order was lifted, it would be bad, but even I had no idea they would be this bad. And if you look at the percentage of low income meeting the standard, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, math, reading, and science, there's only one area where more than half of kids are meeting the standard. And as far as I'm concerned, that's my fault. But I'm not asking you to have any compassion about this because it happened on my watch and it's my fault. What I am saying is, this is the only opportunity I may have to begin to do what I can do to revitalize the area. But I'm asking for support for the library, support of the downtown development district on the merits. On the merits of where kids are not succeeding. And if you go to the next slide, that slide, which shows the Eisenberg feeder pattern, and the top of it up here is Rogers Road, the bottom of it down here you'll find 295. That's the area of the proposed service area, and that's the area where kids go to school. There are no schools here. The only thing that is here to so if the Colonial School District wants to provide tutorial services, there's nowhere for them to provide north of 295. And in terms of this downtown designated district, Colonial's at the table. Civic associations are at the table. And go back to the test scores, because this is compelling. That's why I'm asking for your support. That's why I think this is worthy. That's why I think this is needed. The failure of children third, fourth, and fifth grade to meet the standard, they're destined for mediocrity and failure before they even get started. And so if we're going to provide library services anywhere, in my opinion, we should provide them where they're needed the most. Thank you, Ms. Casey.
Thank you, Councilman Street.
Okay, so building on that, the history and looking at the future, this is where we've been working to develop this Route 9, and we call it an Innovation District Downtown Development Plan, okay? And we are focused around the fact that our new library on Route 9 is going to be an innovation center. It's going to be a wonderful place for children, adults, everyone to go to. And so we are going to create, and there are models, and I'm going to show you an example of one. There are models out that where a library that is built has created the type of revitalization that we're looking for. So we have been working, and we are still working with the community on a 10-year visionary plan for the Route 9 corridor. It's already a focused area for the Division of Community Development and Housing. The district plan, which is sort of the meat and potatoes, really already exists because we already are working in with our HUD funds and land uses working and economic development all have separate incentives. And now we're just going to work together and put them into the proposal. So some of the existing local incentives we're going to be putting into the proposal is the tax abatement legislation that I think was passed in 2012, which is the partial property tax exemption for non-residential properties in Newcastle County to support economic development activities. We also give bonus points with our federal funding application when we have nonprofits and other agencies that apply for funding. We provide extra bonus points for applications that are doing homeownership projects in a targeted low-mod income census tract or another identified census tract where the homeownership rate has dropped. So that would continue. And again, in talking with interdepartmental coordination, we've met with land use, we've talked to land use about really developing a plan to sit down with the business community along Route 9 and talk to them about what their needs are, what do they see, and what types of opportunities do they see for this innovation district. So we're working. The plan will include all existing incentives that the Newcastle County already offers to folks, but more of an interdepartmental coordination working together, because really, I feel like I'm in my housing silo sometimes, and it's good to go and talk to, be in coordination with other departments, because this is really going to help us create a wonderful plan for those communities. Another big piece of it is actually working as we do with the local communities. We had a meeting last week, and some of Ms. Smithers from Dunley Civic Association is here today and has been incredibly supportive. We had a meeting with the Rosegate Civic Association, Simon's Garden Civic Association. We've met with Rose Hill, because Rose Hill Community Center is going to be smack dab in the middle of the designation. And about really what we would do is, once the designation is achieved, then our work would really begin in terms of a steering committee with all community members to start working through how we're going to do and work together on this plan. One of the big things we heard, obviously, were transportation enhancements. So we have WOMAPCO on board. You're talking about walkability surveys around the new library site. And we already have established partners with our nonprofits. Interfaith is already working in Dunleith. They've done 15 houses for home ownership in Dunleith, and they have 5 more that they're working on currently. So we'll be continuing doing that, moving that momentum forward, but just working together and actually having a really well-documented plan to help guide us for the next 10 years. So just a little bit again, I'm almost complete, but what are the possibilities for Route 9? This is the really exciting part for us. The library is going to be the anchor. It's going to be the innovation center, which are going to bring jobs and employment and attract daily users. We think of this concept of a village center that is the anchor. Could complement an innovation campus, because there might be all types of partners that might be interested in becoming part of the new library, and also mixed-use retail and commercial center within a 2-minute walk from the library. We're right on Route 9. Newcastle County, we're working with Rose Hill Community Center, because Rose Hill Community Center and the new library, they're very close to one another. Whether that's a way that we can create walking paths, where Rose Hill could actually also be another anchor for this village green idea. So we're continuing the dialogue as we put together our plan. So I'm going to give you an example. This is just completely, thinking out of the box here. In Plainsboro, New Jersey, New Jersey Township, which is, I know we're not, different from us, but it created a mixed-use retail, medical, residential, and community space on a site, and they used a public library to anchor it, okay? And this opened in 2010. So this is a picture of the Plainsboro Village Center. You can see the library there, medicals, retail, and then there's the street, okay? So we look at it, this is a bird's eye view of Route 9 in the Rose Hill Community Center. So you can see Bolarama there, library site, and the Rose Hill Community Center there. So just for fun, if we overlay that same area in Plainsboro to this site, to the Route 9 site, the whole Plainsboro Village Center on top of what is Route 9. So there's Route 9. If you're looking up or looking north towards Wilmington, there's the entrance to Dunleith there on the corner. So just thinking conceptually here, because transportation enhancements, you know, Ms. Smithers mentioned that a lot of children that for the new library, it's difficult to cross, you know, to get across the street to the new library. So we really have to look at how we're going with, and it's very hard for DelDOT looking at, you know, funding and not, you know, looking at ways that we can do transportation enhancements to make sure that people from across the street have access to the new library. So here's just an example of what they did in Plainsboro. Grassy median, they have this, the brick walkways, access turning lane from, this is the Plainsboro model. Just some of the shops, multi-use shops, highway intersection. This is just a very conceptual idea here. The medical arts building was built around the new library in Plainsboro. And then you have a village green mixed use with the library, with the roof right there. Library green. So just to get the juices flowing, so to speak, is that what could happen and what we'd like to work with our community to do for the next 10 years with this designation, you know, really get us thinking about what could be around that library site. So, you know, the application is due, actually I'll go here. Our application is due on November 1st. It has to be to the state by November 1st. State Planning Commission is meeting in February and March, and the first round of DDDs will be announced on March 1st. The governor will only select one in each county for the first round, but he has the authority in legislation to designate up to 15. And if you apply, you are eligible for future rounds. And when talking to the governor's office, there's no expectation that they're not going to, they might not wait a year. They might do another one. It depends really, you know, on what they get and how they work through it. But once your application is in, you're in, you don't have to reapply, and it gives us the opportunity. Because we know there are multiple, you know, the city of Wilmington is interested in applying. There are other, you know, jurisdictions that are interested in applying, but, you know, we're interested in applying as well. But if we get our application in by November 1st, it will get us into that round of the 15. The resolution that is on the Finance Committee, as Councilman Street said, is, you know, the County Council has to adopt a resolution that does these three things and reviews and approves the jurisdiction's application, authorizes the filing of the application, and if selected, adheres to the district plan, the local incentives, and all other responsibilities. So this is the main guts. There's a lot more to the resolution, but that is some of the requirements of the resolution that we would like to have completed by the time that we apply. So that is November 1st. We do have another council meeting on October 28th, but we wanted to give you the executive summary because we really are excited about it and we don't want to miss the opportunity to be able to apply for this. And last thing I would like to do is just thank Councilman Street again for his help in being part of all the meetings. And for my colleagues, Vincent Garlick, who's here with my department, and Stephanie Rizzo as well. And some of the community, you know, Ms. Smithers and others, Charnese, have been there at the table and very supportive of this. And Jim has been supportive helping me with this. So I know it's all very quick, but I appreciate the opportunity to give this executive summary today.
Questions, comments from members of council? Okay. Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Kerry. I believe all council members are definitely on board with this application for the Downtown Development District and recognize that there are other jurisdictions as well. But once we get in, we are in fact in. But I also want to thank you for your continuing work, not just along this corridor, but throughout Newcastle County, in providing those kind of opportunities to make life better for residents in Newcastle County. I think maybe a lot of folk don't realize all that you do, and I'm certain that the people from the public that are here today don't recognize that you've been the driving force from the very beginning along the Route 9 corridor in terms of what this government can do and what the federal government can do. You are the author of the $500,000 that applied solely for the Route 9 corridor, as well as all of the neighborhood stabilization programs, NSP 1, 2, and 3, which has been largely invested along the Route 9 corridor, including the interfaith housing dollars that have come through the housing home grant fund. So I think you've done an awful lot, and I'm happy that you're continuing to do an awful lot here, but I think, again, you just need to be recognized for all the work that you have done historically in this community and continues to do.
Thank
you. Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, and then Ms. Casey, I'm going to take a leap here in that what we've just seen is probably the bulk of the downtown development district plan, with more work being added to it up to whatever date that you would submit.
Yes, sir.
And I understand that you're wanting this approved tonight because it is a tight timeline.
Carrie Casey with Community Services. I'm a nervous Nelly about these things, and we have this council meeting and we have the 28th, but I know that there's a lot of particulars to it, and would be good, and we would come back and fully brief council on it. But I know that there's all types of other things going on.
I understand your nervousness.
Yeah.
I brought forward a resolution that wouldn't cost the county any money, so that the road could be improved with DDO money, and we could have a bunch of people put to work, and it went down in flames, like an old Western Ford or whatever. So I understand your apprehension, because even the best things get misconstrued for personal purposes. That being said, I would ask that as you move forward, that we could have a copy of that final plan, at least so we, those of us that are outside of the district as well, can answer the questions. And just one more thing, as far as the Eisenberg School and its feeder pattern, I have young neighbors that walk to that school. So I'm well aware of it, and we are a part of those statistics that are up there. Though we're not part of the plan on the other side of the bridge, we are a part of that school and those districts and those numbers. Now, I appreciate, I just ask that you keep us informed. This is good, I'm sure. Knowing your due diligence, there will be much more to try to knock this out of the park with the state. And I just ask that we have that when that's available.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Councilman Tackett and Councilman Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Carrie, again, thank you very much, you and the staff and the department. Historically, I also have been one of your biggest cheerleaders on this council, so thank you for the work you do. A couple quick questions. You said that the first round of the DDD would be announced in March, and there's only three. I think I understood you say one in each county?
Yes.
And do we know how many applications are in Newcastle County?
Yeah. We went to the public meeting on Friday. We know the city is going to be applying.
They're going to apply.
And I know that Smyrna, Dover...
but obviously, we're only worried about Newcastle County.
Right, but we've been reading the paper. There might be a couple of other jurisdictions. It's a very late. I mean, it's a lot of work. The application itself, so you'd have to. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work. So.
Thank you.
But again, there's 15 that can be designated. So even if there were a few,
but you only get one a year.
Well, no, we have won the first round, and the governor's office had said they're not sure when they're going to begin designating more. And so it could be within the year, it could be next year. They wouldn't give me a time frame on that. But what they did say was that the first allocation of money is $7 million, and that is for this fiscal year. So if you think they're not going to be designating any until March, they're going to have money, they're going to have the $7 million from this year, and then they're going to, and the governor's very supportive of this, they would allocate more money. So you would assume, just in my head, that you would think, well, they're going to have more money, so they might designate more.
Remember, you used to work for the federal government.
Yeah.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. Carrie, I'd like to focus on the walkability component of what you had to say, and it's a particular experience that I've seen across the country, that communities that are walkable do a better job of supporting the residents, particularly those that are not available to automobiles. The whole concept of the downtown development district is a wonderful asset partnership with the state and federal government. I noticed you said that there are different alternatives for these DDDs. They could be residential, mixed use, and commercial. And I didn't hear the specifics, although I heard some inference that it would be the land use department's partnering with you to speak to the business community along Route 9. That's more of a hike than the normal walk is 5 minutes. Healthier folks sure. that aren't aged and infirm will walk 10 to 15 minutes. But I would hope that we would partner with the community to find opportunities within a five-minute walking distance to provide the opportunity to an option to walk where we live, shop, work, play, pray, school our children, and provide medical needs around that greenway, that little pedestrian precinct area.
Right.
It would better ensure the success of this village if we can enhance those possibilities. I like what you said, that the mixed-use retail within a two-minute walk from the library is a goal, is an aspiration. I just want to second that aspiration and then say that it takes decades for absorption of the plan, and there needs to be a commitment to components that are not the quick hit for money, and make sure the subsequent governments, we can't bind them, but that subsequent governments stay true to that plan. And there's nothing that we can do. The dead hand can't control the future. But I just want to put on the record that I hope the retail, medical, residential, all are synergistically tied to the single-family residential around a village green, and that we don't forget that for Rosegate, Simon's Gardens, Dunleith, and those areas, they'll appreciate what we do today. Thanks.
And they're at the table. I mean, you know, we're all working together, and that's, you know, the work we begin. And we're already working together on those types of things. So it's just helping us get that designation, so then we can really plan long term.
Councilmember Diller,
what was the RFP for this announced?
It was announced, I think, August 6th. And there was some back and forth between we met with DSHA and on eligibility and things like that. But yes, I think it was August 6th. It might have been August 8th. I'm not 100% sure.
Councilman Spotley.
I apologize for having to step out. I just want, in response to Councilman Weiner, I'll just say that there's already quite a bit of walkability in that area. There's quite a few residents of that area that traverse or cross the 295 overpass to the shopping center, where there's a supermarket, shoe store, Dollar General. So there's quite a bit of walkability there. Mm-hmm. Although I'm sure Councilman Street and I share the hope that with this revitalization, with the library, with the increased activity, although we both, I'm sure, support small businesses, that some of the mobile female businesses will not be walking there anymore.
Councilman White.
Yeah, and thank you, Councilman Smiley. That reminded me one point. When I saw that slide of the Route 9 corridor, it immediately said auto-centric. It said the pedestrian takes his life in his hands. And design features are critical to make the automobile driver a welcome participant, but that the bicyclist and the pedestrian are the first class citizens, and that they feel safe to walk in a safe, aesthetically pleasing environment as well as safe.
And that's what we heard.
Councilman Street.
Councilman Smiley, answer your question is absolutely and unequivocally yes. And I know our police department is working actively to help us with that and to bring some changes. But One thing is, like any other application in response to any other RFP, it's about being able to compete. What's uniquely different about this application, if council authorizes it to go forward, is that we're talking about potentially a $20 million library being an anchor for it. And the other jurisdictions probably will not have that type of competitive edge, which is why both of these votes tonight are, in my opinion, very, very important. And I started out by saying they're directly connected. Without the library, the likelihood of having a successful DDD application is a lot slimmer. I'll leave it at that. Thank you. And I want to thank Ms. Casey, everybody she mentioned, for their hard work. And I know I'm not the easiest person to work with. Thank you for your patience and working with me. And I'd like to thank Mr. Bull. I'd like to thank my trustees for all participating here as part of bringing this before you today. Thank you all very much.
Before we move on, I know we had members of the public that were here from the area. I don't know if they would like an opportunity to say anything about this or be recognized as such, or
I don't know. I'll leave it to them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Lee Jarman. I have lived in the area for a number of years, since 1969. So it was just like homecoming when I heard the speech about the old schools, Dunleavy and Mapledale, and some of the others rose here because my children went to those schools. We have been actively working to address the issues in our community for a number of years. At this point in time, we have what is called the 913 Alliance, which is about 10 civic associations along Route 9, who are working steadfast and hard to make sure that the things that we talked about today come to fruition. Everybody is on board. Everybody is positive. And I had asked them to make sure they stay focused on what we're doing to change the environment. We know what libraries do. They grow business. They present opportunities. They give our children a chance to aspire. And so I just want to say that I appreciate all the hard work that has been done and will be done. And we stand ready to work along with anyone who is working in the interest of making change in our community. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Please identify yourself.
Chairman Richard Smith, NWCP, the president, council members.
Yes.
I'm a resident from Dundee, 1960, 310 Rogers Road. Had mill side on one side, we was on the other side. Jay Street, when he decided to run for office, I was with him, Larry Carr, and some other folks. I went to Mr. Rett and Dr. Moore in Tasmania, who was very active in her community in Oakland. And I asked them, we were sitting inside the health center, I asked them what would be very important that Jay could get into. And I know that Penrose had been working on a library back in the back. But we got to talking and said it would be nice to dream of Route 9 with a library and a health center and a job corps piece, an employment piece, and a piece that can incorporate everybody in their community. And I went back to Jay. I said, Jay, they got a dream. I didn't talk to Ms. Mills, to Al. I just talked to a few people in that community, plus Rogers Road. It was so filthy on Rogers Road at the time. It was drugs, it was prostitute. It was the big trucks come up and down, stopping on this area and stuff. And it was no business. It needed a plan. Then we had Rosegate, Oakmont, and they was integrating and stuff. They put the new development up there in. And it needed a plan. And the plan became bigger than the politicians, or the NAACP, or anybody else. It became a hope that if we get a library, then Reverend Bolock came along and he did the church. He has, I talked to Reverend Bolock about drug rehab and movement and incorporating his church there, because the concept is, when I came from Rosegate, from Dundee, we used to cut through Millside and go to the store, Bill's Market, and it was everything on that pipe. It was a very nice pipe and route. And what I seen was a dream. And 10 years later or more, that dream is that close. It's that close to say, like Councilman Smiley was saying, we got a chance of getting rid of the prostitutes and drugs and work with Bolock and somebody and get them in treatment. We got a chance to have jobs come in and work with the port and work with the construction company and bring them into the library and get a employment agent there. We got a chance of working with the bridge and stuff and bring them in and teach how can you be a policeman and stuff. We got hope. We got a neighborhood that didn't have hope, that have hope now. So I asked the two politicians, which both of my friends, and Smiley, you my friend, to get your heads together and let's work for the better of the people. This time is about the people. It's not about us. It'll never be about us. If you build it, they'll come. Because when I went to my convention, 7-Eleven is willing to give minorities money to open up stores. Wawa was willing, not Wawa, but Dunkin' Donuts is willing. It's business out there is willing that got money set aside to come on that avenue with some business. Let's turn this avenue around and let's say not my avenue, not this avenue, but it's Oss Avenue. It's Route 9 belong to Oss. And let's just get together and say, hey, put the fuss to the side for a moment and let's get this done. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions for members of council? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. My name is Sandra Smithers. I'm from the Dundee community. And I just want to, first of all, thank Councilman Street for that history. I happen to be a lifelong member of the Dundee community. I experienced all of what he spoke of. I experienced the bombing of the home. I knew Geraldine Rayfield. I knew all of that. Many of us, as we left our community and became more educated, decided that we would find other places to live that were more compatible with our lifestyle and our level of education. But some of us chose to stay in the community because we had a commitment and a passion about our community. We've worked very hard to do what we do in the communities of Dundee and Garfield Park and all of the others. We've done it individually. And the thing that I'm so impressed with is the fact that in this plan, everyone is coming together. Everyone spoke so eloquently about what has happened in the past and what everyone has done. And we all have our particular things that we've done and our particular passions. But to be able to bring them all together in the service of our communities and make these communities the kind of place that the quality of life is what anyone would like to experience is, I think, a very lofty plan, and it's very, very worthy of all of the effort that has been put into it. And I support it so much. I'm as passionate as Councilman Street because I've lived it. And so I just want to thank everyone for all of the hard work. I want to thank Carrie Casey for all that she's done and all of the members of Newcastle County who worked very diligently, and all of the others who have supported this plan. And I just hope that it can go forward and the council will approve this.
Thank you very much for those comments. Any other questions, comments? Yes, very briefly, sir.
Yeah, real quick.
Draw the record and identify yourself.
Richard please. Smith again. Lord Reardon was our lawyer for the NAACP. Lynn Mitchell was our president. And Reverend Moore was the president of the Wilmington branch of the NAACP. Those three worked together. They worked real tight together with the community. And I just want you to recognize them, Jay, as you know, they was civil rights leaders in name and everything. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments. Any other comments, questions, members of council? Before we move along, I'd just like to say I applaud the vision, all the hard work that is going on, And I know that we have opportunities in New Castle County through planning and special districts to renew and renovate and bring opportunity and hope to areas of our county. I think this is going to be one of the great examples of that, and I'm sure that County Council will be working to make that a reality tonight as well. Thank you. Councilman
Yeah, Mr. Chair, sure. Carrie, can that be posted somewhere? Because I've actually gotten stopped because there's been a lot of coverage from constituents asking me what it's all about. I'd love to be able to send them to a link.
The link for the PowerPoint or for the actual plan?
Both.
Okay. Yeah, we can have both. We can put them on our, we can send it to you. We can put it on our website as well.
Okay, if you do both, that'd be great. Thank you.
Councilman Weiner.
Very quickly, I want to get this on the record. Since I've already said it publicly.
Whatever.
I want to try, when we get all this squared away, then I want to work on the grant money it will take to put the rehab in Middletown that the resident there feels should be built instead of a library. I want to give him one. So I want to work with you on that.
Thank you, Councilman Smiley. Moving right along on the agenda under ordinances. We're running out of time, so I want to move quickly here. Ordinance 14-098 to provide for the installation of Granville with red streetlights in the ponds of Odessa subdivision located in St. George's 100 and for a light tax based on the cost of streetlights. So we're going to provide the light tax for the ponds of Odessa with the Granville grid style streetlights. Any questions for members of council? We approve these quite recently under request of developer for the light tax. Okay, that's the ponds of Odessa. Ordinance 14-099. Provide for the installation of traditionaire streetlights in the preserve at Robinson Farm subdivision located in Appaquinimic 100 and for a light tax based on the cost of streetlights. All right, traditionaire lights with the tax for the preserve at Robinson Farm subdivision. Any other questions, comments from council? All right, moving along. Councilman Smiley, ordinance 14-100.
Yes, a couple of years ago by a 7-6 vote, we passed an ordinance to require any contracts above $25,000 for approval to come before council. I said at that time, I gave assurances to purchasing that if there came a time when, after due diligence, they felt it was creating some hardships, wasn't working out right, if we can make things smoother, come talk to me. I met with purchasing. I'm comfortable with the way things have gone the last couple of years. Also, cognizant of increases in cost, so I bring forward the ordinance today to reinstate the $50,000, and in addition, as everyone is well aware, we routinely authorize the purchase of library materials, books, subscriptions, periodicals, that would automatically be approvable as well. In addition, we will get a report to us for the next year as to what falls in that, so we could do a comparison. And I would just, it's really what it is. We're reestablishing the $50,000. I feel comfortable with it and what we've looked at as what we've been approving. And so that's basically what it is. I don't know if anyone from the administration wants to speak on it or not.
Any comments?
Well, this is Tony Gardner, Chief Administrative Services.
All right.
Procurement. I met with Councilman Smiley in regards to this matter. And what we're going to do is every month, I mean, actually every quarter, we're going to provide a report. Anything that's over the $25,000 threshold, we'll provide a report to council in regards to anything over that dollar amount. What the issue we had is that it was creating a bottleneck every time we had to go through council for something of that dollar threshold. So we're trying to make the process much faster. And this is what we do.
Any comments, questions from members of council? All right. Moving along. Under other, New Castle County grant requests. Moving along under grant applications. House of God for All People, Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a $500. It's a $600 grant request. I'm recommending $500. The House of God for All People received $500 earlier, sponsored by President Bullock. And the gentleman who's responsible for these awards programs came before council for the second time. I did advise with him after our meeting that it was not necessary to continue to come to council to put on a show. It probably wasn't in his best interest, but I would support him because he does cover part of my district. So this is a result of that meeting, and I move to give them an additional $500 to cover the expenses of this program.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Not voting.
Okay, the grant for $500 to House of God for All People is approved for community support of their program. Next one, Delaware Chapter of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, NOBLE. Councilman Bell, yay. Please identify yourself for the record.
Karen Barlow, Councilman Bell's legislative aide. Mr. Bell received a grant from the Delaware Chapter of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, also known as NOBLE, for $2,500. This grant is to purchase items to complete food baskets for needy families for Thanksgiving and Christmas Day dinners. Mr. Bell is willing to give $500 and would know if, and would like to know if anyone else would like to contribute.
Okay, there's a, yes, Councilman Hollins?
I thought I responded to say that.
Oh, you did? I didn't know if I was supposed to say it.
That's the only way you're going to get it.
Well, Mr. Bullock, Mr. Street, and Mr. Hollins have agreed to do $500, and then if anyone else would like to give any funds, would be appreciated.
I'd like to contribute $500 as well. Okay. So we have a motion with a total amount of $2,500 going to the DE Chapter of NOBLE. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Not voting.
All right, the grant to the DE Chapter of NOBLE for $2,500 for annual adopt-a-family is approved. Okay. Community events, grant applicant, Wilmington NAACP, Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I had asked my aide to submit a mini grant for two tickets for the NAACP annual awards banquet. However, it ended up going over to the events and ads section. So, and I talked to Councilman Smiley about this. It really doesn't matter to him or to me. I don't think it really matters to council. But this is just for two tickets for the NAACP annual awards. It does not cover a table. It essentially went out for two tickets, and it ended up being here. So I'll leave it here for two tickets for the NAACP annual awards for $140.
Okay, that doesn't require any action other than just supporting us.
It just ended up here. This is a whole new program, a whole new process for us. And it ended up here as long as we get the tickets.
If it's coming out of the community events and ads, it does require council approval.
All right, can I have a motion?
Move that we award 140, that we purchase two tickets for the NAACP Annual Freedom Fund Awards Banquet in the amount of $140.
Second.
There's second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Not voting.
Okay.
Chair.
Yes, Councilman Tackett.
Just a question. I don't know, Smiley, Betsy, somebody. But didn't we have something that said if you were under $200? Now, I know this is a different fund, but out of our general office grants, if it's under like $200 or something, that can be approved per president and, you know.
A mini grant can get you $150.
Mini grants, $150.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything with
it. Council President Betsy Gordon would like to offer comment, please.
Thank you very much, Council. Mini grants are $150 or less. But the new program for community events, that new line that was authorized, it was stated that it was going to be for tickets. So it can come out of this line. If you choose to use a mini grant, it can go differently, but you need to let me know.
Okay. Well, we've approved that the recent ad and tickets. All right, expense and revenue roundtable. Anything for the good of the order there? All right, moving along under other. Councilman Hollins requested to give a report on his trip to the Congressional Black Caucus.
Thank you, Mr. President. As we are required to
you
do
can call
once
me
we
Mr.
travel.
President. That's good.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. To have a report after we travel. As council members know, I returned from the Congressional Black Caucus about 2 weeks ago. My aide will hand out a written report as well as the program from the awards banquet that was held two Saturdays ago.
Take one.
So if you would take one of the report as well and one of the
awards.
Why under your go?
Yeah.
That's usually.
I'm sorry.
Yes, you did.
All right, take it.
I think there are two different ways to do this, different.
No, she just no. Made it easier to take one.
Kimmy messed up.
I thought it was easy. I thought these two separate ones. Yeah.
Everyone has a copy. I will proceed. This year, the Congressional Black Caucus Annual Legislative Conference opened against the backdrop of the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. One of the most important pieces of civil rights legislation, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, was passed into law 50 years ago. But a look back at polling from that year reveals that many Americans were not yet on board with basic anti-discrimination principles universally accepted as law today. 51% of Americans in 1964 survey said restaurant owners should not have to serve Negroes. 53% in the survey said there should be laws against marriage between Negroes and whites. 84% in the survey said property owners should not have to sell to Negroes. Today, housing remains the single most important asset in the accumulation of wealth for the typical American household. 92% of personal wealth in the black community is tied to home ownership, compared to 58% of the personal wealth in the white community. The financial crisis has produced the greatest loss of wealth in history for African Americans and their communities. While the black community continues to suffer from the highest unemployment rates and the lowest incomes, a staggering 59% of personal wealth in the black community has been lost during the housing crisis. Additionally, recent increases in home prices are driven by investor purchases, formerly owner-occupied housing, often for cash. In other words, in a lot of the urban neighborhoods across the United States of America, as people are trying to qualify for mortgages, investors are running in paying cash for homes. 70 to 95% of all buyers are investors in too many urban communities across America. Yet, investor purchases are a mixed blessing for a variety of reasons. First, wealth accruing from rising home values on investor properties does not remain in communities to the extent the properties are owned by absentee landlords. Second, a large portion of investors' purchases in distressed neighborhoods are in single-family units, thus raising potential management issues due to the scattered locations of these investment properties. Third, while investors contribute to rising home prices, helping strengthen home prices in the near term, they can also distort the market prices upward or downward, particularly if they are buying for cash, since the homes do not require inspections or appraisals. Fourth, investors may also crowd out first-time home buyers, including young families, because those borrowers generally must go through the time-consuming loan approval process, including property appraisals and inspections. Home ownership among young families has drastically declined. Young adults living with their parents is at a 40-year high. Finally, because investors purchase homes solely to make a profit, they will not likely invest in their properties the same way as do homeowners. Financial bottom line considerations may discourage landlords from investing any dollars in their properties beyond improvements required to maintain homes to local code. Standards which often places a burden on local government, as we have seen here in Newcastle County, and I'm reminded of Brookmont Farms. The amount of resources we had to put into Brookmont Farms because of the same problem, where it was primarily owned by investment opportunities. A fundamental challenge facing home ownership today is a lack of public awareness of the health of the housing market and its impact on our overall economy. There's an increasing perception that the housing market is recovering on its own and that significant public policy intervention may not be necessary. After all, foreclosures have fallen significantly from their peak, home prices are rising, construction starts have increased, sales of new and existing homes are up, and mortgage originations are strong. But a closer look and examination of almost any of these data reveals a disturbing reality. Take mortgages for one example. In the past year, more than 70% of conventional mortgages have been for refinancing a home, not home purchase mortgages. Yet first-time home buyers drive markets and thus the economy. This year, roughly two-thirds of conventional mortgages in the second quarter were to refinance. In a healthy market, the refinancing versus purchase would be just the opposite. This unusually high proportion of refinancing as a share of all mortgages is an indicator of a market still struggling, and that is certainly the case here in Newcastle County. Refinancing lowers the long-term cost of a loan for borrowers, and that's good for families. And refinancing generates earnings for financial firms. But refinancing activity is simply churning the same mortgages. It does not represent an expansion of home ownership, which essentially is a healthy housing market and expand asset accumulation by household. Transfer tax for 2012 due to date in Newcastle County is $6,688,048 compared to $8,633,791 for the same period in 2014. One of the most serious impediments to housing in America today is the housing finance system. Access to mortgage credit has been severely constrained, particularly for African Americans and Latinos, as well as young households and low and moderate income families. According to the Federal Reserve, national mortgage originations for borrowers with credit scores between 620 and 680 have fallen by 90% since the onset of the housing crisis. According to the Federal Reserve, nationwide mortgage originations for borrowers with credit scores between 620 and 680 has fallen by 90%. Even borrowers who can put down sizable down payments are being denied conventional mortgages. The average mortgage applicant who has denied credit in September 2013 had a down payment of 16% and was denied. Loans for African Americans have fallen from 1.3 million in 2005 to 280,000 in 2011, a drop of nearly 80%. During the same period, loans to Latinos fell from 1.9 million to 442,000, or 76%, while loans to whites decreased by 31%. So you can see the comparison there. Currently, there are two major legislative proposals before the House and Senate to restructure the housing finance system, but both proposals are far off track, according to members of the Congressional Black Caucus. Members of the Congressional Black Caucus and the newly appointed director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency to reform Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. However, FFA's actions are not likely to improve access. And I would just like to point out that the new chairman of the FFA, FHFA, is a former member of the Congressional Black Caucus. Mel Watt was the congressman from North Carolina. In response to the housing crisis of the 1930s, the federal government aggressively started numerous new institutions, including the Federal Home Loan Banks, the FHA, and Fannie Mae. However, African Americans were denied access to FHA-secured mortgages until President Kennedy in 1962. The government's role in home lending was further enhanced after World War II through the Veterans Administration and in the 1960s with the establishment of Freddie Mac. I believe government at every level should be affirmatively engaged in creating opportunities for home ownership based on fact, not fiction, and history, not nostalgia. But the increasing diversity of America's future potential homeowners should be our deciding factor. And pretty much what I realize in Washington is that the whole notion of home ownership as we've known in America has basically changed. We can't do it all here, but we can certainly do our part. But there are members of the Congressional Black Caucus who are definitely pushing the federal government to do the right thing. And I think too many people here in America take it for granted that 30-year mortgages that are supported by the federal government. And even so, it has gotten out of control because a lot of the people who want to blame the housing crisis on the poor people and on minorities is just not factual. Only 9% of subprime loans went to first-time home buyers. The bulk of that money went to people that are refinancing. So all of that is not the case, but people are being treated as if they were responsible for the mortgage crisis, and now you have this clamp on loans, and it's very, very difficult for folks to get mortgage financing. They're working on that in Washington. And the other thing is that a lot of millennials have given up altogether on owning homes. People have decided that it's far too difficult. People that we know who've tried to get mortgages more recently can tell you firsthand that it is a very difficult process.
And if that doesn't turn around in terms of home ownership, then we're going to sink with the rest of the nation. And I think that there are people in Washington trying to make certain that that does not happen. But I think on a local level, we still have a responsibility to remove the impediments to home ownership in New Castle County. That is my report, and I'm willing to accept questions.
Thank you. A very powerful presentation, a sobering one on your recent attendance of the Congressional Black Caucus concerning housing. Any questions, comments from members of council? Councilman Powers has joined us at the table. Any other questions, comments? I know we're
Let
going
me just say that I forgot one thing. Yeah. My aide also passed around the awards. I forgot about this. All of it wasn't doom and gloom. This is actually the program from the awards dinner that was held on that Saturday evening. And as you glimpse it, as you can see, that it was a pretty first-class presentation. The President of the United States did speak, as he normally does, except for, he's spoken every year at this convention, except for one, and his wife spoke at that one. But you can read through here and see that it was a very noted, and I was very pleased to be a part of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for bringing that to the table as well. Any other questions, comments? A motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the Finance Committee of October 14th is now adjourned. Thank you.